I'm Linda Holmes. I'm the editor of NPR's pop culture and entertainment blog, Monkey See, and your host at Pop Culture Happy Hour. I'm here in the studio in Washington with Stephen Thompson.
Hello, Linda.
Hello, Stephen. Stephen is an editor at NPR Music. And in that capacity, Stephen is headed off very soon to South by Southwest.
Yes. I have spent the week that we would ordinarily be recording this podcast putting together the Austin 100.
It's a wonderful thing.
And I would like to take this opportunity before we announce the rerun that you're about to hear to beseech, to implore, to beg everyone listening to please go to npr.org/music, look for the Austin 100, and you can download for limited time a 100-song, 6.5-hour omnibus of music discoveries as handpicked largely by me.
That's right. And we had illnesses, we had people out, we had an ill producer, we had various people who weren't even here, and eventually we realized
the fates were not with us.
Some weeks it's just not happening. So, but we did manage to pull ourselves together to bring you a rerun. Now, we are gutting it out, waiting for spring.
Yes.
I think it's safe to say.
Yes.
So we chose a springtime episode from last spring specifically.
An aspirational episode.
An aspirational episode to make us dream of warmer temperatures and happier times of year. This episode is one where we dealt with two basic topics. The first is the rise and fall of the sex comedy.
Yes.
And the sex comedy, as you'll hear us discuss, has a bunch of different iterations. It's had its ups and its downs and so forth. So that's topic A. The other topic is a sprawling conversation about Easter candy,
which it is a perennial,
which got pretty heated.
Yes, probably the most powerful disagreements we've ever had on this show.
They really are. It is very heated. It might be the only time I've ever done my imitation of a talk show host, a political talk show host. So we hope you will enjoy the rerun. And next week we will be back. We'll have another episode coming up before you head out of town.
I will, my voice is destroyed by South by Southwest.
And we might be able to bring a special guest on the show next week. And,
perhaps.
So we hope to have lots of wonderful things planned for you. But for now, please enjoy Sex Comedies and Marshmallow Peeps. And that's the kicky music that means it is time again for Pop Culture Happy Hour. I'm Linda Holmes. I'm the editor of NPR's pop culture and entertainment blog, Monkey See. And today, well, it is spring break.
Woo!
It's coming up to spring break, as you all may know.
Stephen Thompson going wild.
Just so you know, every time you say the word spring break, I'm going to do that.
I really hope not. In honor of spring break, we are going to talk about teen comedies, the movies that make us think perhaps a little bit about spring break. After that, we have a little bit of a throwdown. I'm just going to say right now, peeps will be involved. And then, as always, we will close the show with what is making us happy this week. Before we get started, let's go around the table. Stephen Thompson, what do you do at NPR?
I am a writer and editor with NPR Music.
And Trey Graham, what do you do at NPR?
I edit movies coverage for the website, and occasionally I write about things that catch my interest, like maybe theater.
And Glenn Weldon, what do you do at NPR?
I occasionally write about books and comic books for the NPR website.
And Glenn is hard at work on his book, which we will just get out of the way mentioning right now.
Yeah,
You think we will. You know, Porky's reminds me of my book about Superman.
So it is that time of year, and spring means, among other things, spring vacation. So this is what got us talking about the teen sex comedy. Now, I did a little research.
Did you?
Did you now?
Yeah, I feel like it's important to come prepared for a discussion of the teen comedy and the teen sex comedy. And one of the things I did is on my favorite box office numbers website, Box Office Mojo, I pulled up their adjusted numbers for the top 50. You can't really get teen sex comedies. You can get R-rated youth. Mm. But unfortunately, that sweeps in a
Actually,
lot of...
Actually, that's the title of my...
That sweeps in a lot of stuff like There's Something About Mary. It's sort of as long as it kind of is youth-oriented.
Raunch, exactly.
But you can get high school comedies. So I focused on high school comedies, figuring that there would be some overlap there. And my sense going in, my thesis, shall we say...
I don't think in 80 however many episodes of this show I've come packing a thesis.
Right. Your hypothesis. Right.
My thesis was... It seems to me that high school comedies in general are just not getting made that much anymore. Mm-hmm. They've kind of given way to the Judd Apatow comedy and stuff like that. So I went back and I plotted in adjusted 2012 dollars the 50 top grossing high school comedies by year, mm-hmm. and discovered, as I sort of thought, that there are basically two little boomlets mm-hmm. in high school comedies.
Hmm. 1983.
One is from 1982 to 1985.
Sure.
1982 is...
Porky's.
Fast Times at Ridgemont High.
Okay, right.
Also Porky's.
82 is also Porky's.
82 is also Porky's. Between 82 and 85, you have 14 movies that this particular chart, and obviously you can argue with classifications by genre, but this particular
you're losing
chart.
It's your hot dog, the movie, your ski schools. Don't confuse the two.
Your hamburger, the motion picture.
Your hamburger, the motion picture.
I'm not sure actually that some of those actually show up on this particular
probably
chart
not.
Unless they are high school oriented, not just teenager oriented, okay. but sort of whatever. Anyway.
Revenge of the Nerds.
But then, yeah.
It's
but
college. It wouldn't show up.
College. Oh, yeah.
But
yeah.
then you get another boomlet from about 99 to about 2003, and that is following in 1999.
American Pie.
Right. But also, after Clueless in 95, the 99 also starts this little bunch of 10 Things I Hate About You
right.
and She's All That. This
sort
kind of
classically
which are very
inspired.
Mild, which are
right.
milder movies.
Yes. Not
Can't
so
Hardly
much,
Wait.
I was just
going to
say Can't Hardly Wait.
Right, Can't Hardly Wait is 98, so it's basically that same little wave. Then, between, like, 2007 and now, there are only, like, three or four.
Right.
Because there are
Sex Drive was recently.
There's 14.
Superbad
is 07. But this is one of the interesting things, is that Superbad, unlike American Pie, unlike Porky's, unlike Fast Times at Ridgemont High, did not bring... A little wave of teen movies. It brought a wave of more Judd Apatow movies
right.
and more kind of raunchy comedy.
Mm-hmm.
It did not introduce a bunch more high school movies. And the other thing I should say, too, about that early 80s boomlet is that that early 80s boomlet also catches early John Hughes, which starts at that same time.
Mm-hmm.
16 Candles is 84. So it's always been more than sex comedies in both
right.
of these little things. There are a couple after that. 2004, you have Mean Girls and Napoleon Dynamite. And,
right.
and so there are...
I'm not sure if you'd even consider Napoleon Dynamite a
high school comedy. I'm just saying on my chart, I don't know exactly what they consider
impressive.
A high school comedy.
Got a Z-axis and a Y-axis.
I was just trying to get a general sense. But it's interesting to me because it really is true that there are just not a lot of high school comedies at all kicking around right now. Mm-hmm. So here's my question. If it's true... that they're not making so much of your Risky Business and mm-hmm. your Last American Virgin and all that stuff. What do we have now instead of the teen sex comedy?
We have cringe comedy because if you think about it, the first wave of this stuff, your Spring Breaks, your Last American Virgins, Lose It, Hard Bodies, all those movies, were really about, A, holding up sex as the end-all be-all, but also ridiculing it, making it something embarrassing and often humiliating.
Mm-hmm.
And so the first wave of cringe comedy was really about sex. And what we have now is cringe comedy about manners and about saying the wrong thing at the wrong moment, about racism, about saying the wrong thing about race,
right.
or even about sexuality.
Right. I liked how you said sexuality there. It's going to be my ringtone.
When I was thinking back about these things, I was thinking about how, you know, these movies back when I was a kid in that first boomlet didn't speak to me at all for
very obvious reasons.
You're saying that Porky's didn't work for you?
Because the ogling in those films was kind of unidirectional.
Right.
And directed.
Yeah.
And Into the showers. And in a way...
Talk about your male gaze.
Right. And in a way, those films weren't really so much about sex or even lust. They were about boobs.
Yeah.
That was kind of the object.
And during a conversation today, a friend of the podcast, Mark Hirsch, mentioned to me, of course, we no longer live in a world where you have to go to Porky's to see boobs.
Exactly. Right.
Boobs are not as difficult to find in popular entertainment as they once were.
They are as prominent in our lives through the internet as they are in society itself.
Yeah. Nice. Perfect.
Stephen, these movies back in the day were meant not for me. Not for the Lindas of the world, not for the Treys of the world, but for you.
Me specifically.
And your people. I'm guessing you had a slightly different reaction to these.
Well, I'm now 27 years into puberty.
How's it going?
And I feel like I'm getting somewhere. I certainly was a target audience. But I think that you bring up a really, really important point about the availability of naked ladies in ways that, you know, when I was a kid, when I was about 12, 13 years old, my parents, God bless them, gave me HBO in my room.
Wow.
We were not only one of these families with cable, but we were one of these families where the pubescent boy has HBO and a guide, the little guidebook.
Oh, my God. To what?
Oh, dear.
The little guidebook. It's called Where Did I Come From? No. The little guidebook for the cable would come in the mail, and it would be a little, you know, little full-color booklet, and you'd flip through, and it'd have a guide to, like, here are the hot new movies on HBO, Cinemax.
Did you have Cinemax in your room?
Cinemax? Well, Cinemax was not quite as...
It had not yet come to be called Skinemax.
Yeah, it was not as... It did not have quite the Skinemax. It was sort of like Stars today, you know, kind of a slightly second tier. Right. Premium movie channel. In that guidebook, it would have a little key. A violence would be a V.
You were really sad the V was from violence.
N.
That's what she said.
N was key, obviously. Nudity. And the best of all, SSC.
Yeah.
I think maybe it may have just been SS. Strong sexuality? Anyway, I loved it. And I sat through
whatever
so
whatever it was.
Many, and the problem, as a even more desperate and bedraggled than I am now, pubescent boy, every movie at that time had boobs. Like your action, your cop buddy movie would have
Working
like...
Working girl has boobs.
Yeah. She sure did. in the cop movie, they would inevitably take you through, like, the strip club. And that was the same as the movie that was, like, boobs galore. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah. I would stay up, of course, based on, you know, when these movies were airing. Yeah. You don't have to do that now.
Bless you.
This is why there are fewer of them.
It's interesting because a lot of the raunch comedies now do not necessarily rely on seeing women naked so much.
There's a lot of poop jokes in raunch comedies.
There's a lot
lots
of poop jokes. And
lots of barf jokes.
Those are less aspirational.
And lots of sex jokes. There's lots of sexual activity jokes.
Lots of awkward male nudity.
Right. That's true.
More of that. That's true. Well, if you're going to push the envelope
not as impressed.
Somewhere that it is not already.
Right.
I don't know where to go with that metaphor, but
Jason Segel's underparts is where that
there are frontiers. There are frontiers that have not, you know, been explored as much, and Jason Segel's Wang would constitute part of that. You know, whereas there have been sort of wave after wave, generation after generation of teen sex comedies in which we've seen all sorts of lady parts, and God bless them.
We reached a real new threshold this past year in The Hangover 2. We got lady boy parts.
That's awesome. Well, I did not see The Hangover 2, but Forgetting Sarah Marshall, you know, has that long scene, so to speak, of Jason Segel full frontally nude, and it is...
And weeping.
it is very jarring.
Because you don't see it.
You don't see that as much.
Yeah, you don't. Raunch comedies now are more like the Judd Apatow movies. They're more likely to be about sort of young slacker dudes out of college than they are to be about high school students. Yeah. I don't think as much of it is about high school students.
Sure.
And even college students.
But I think there's a useful distinction, even going back to that first boomlet. I mean, we would have to separate out Fast Times at Ridgemont High, Risky Business, The Sure Thing,
sure.
Can't Hardly Wait,
sure.
from The Last American Virgins,
right.
and The Losin' Its.
Of course.
You know, I said that I didn't see myself in any of those films. I will say that I did see myself in Risky Business. Do you remember Bronson Pinchot in Risky Business? Bronson Pinchot in the final scene of the film when they're bringing all the furniture back that has been stolen, he is helping his friend put the furniture back. And there's a scene where he is gingerly arranging some tchotchkes on a shelf. And Tom Cruise comes in and says, we have to hurry. And he says, well, I would put the Chinese stuff on a different shelf than the Greek stuff. I don't think it's a good idea to mix centuries. And I thought, well, there I am.
That's my people.
There's the guy. Now, I soured on these films, and it's a lingering sour, because at some point when I was 13 or 14 years old, my parents must have read some god-awful, hippy-dippy parenting book, which said something along the lines of, well, if you want to have frank and open discussions of sexuality, it's a good idea to watch with your children.
Oh,
no, goody.
Oh, my God.
So, smash cut to Glenn on the floor, 12 years old, watching Porky's 2 the next day. The next day.
No.
And while, you know, my very conservative parents, Goody and Proctor Weldon from the Plymouth Colony,
works every week,
are just cringing, and I want the entire rug to swallow me up, and it's just awful. And my brother passes by, my 18-year-old brother at the time, laughing, because he sees that this is a stupid thing to do.
I wouldn't even watch something like that with my parents now. I watched Bridesmaids with my parents over Christmas break, and I was like, this is uncomfortable.
Yeah, that was awful.
This is uncomfortable.
I remember sitting down with my parents and having them show me Midnight Cowboy.
Really?
No.
My parents believed, my parents wanted, well, part of it is
sex comedies.
My parents are nerds. My parents wanted to share their favorite stuff.
That has nothing
stuff,
to do with
And they loved
anything.
That movie.
Yeah,
it
has nothing to do with that. Yeah, it's.
I don't know if that it was any more awkward than anything else in my life at that time.
Steven, did those conversations where all the dudes in those films have about, oh, I want to do this to her, and like, did those conversations actually happen? Because they terrified me, those lustful conversations.
They were worse.
Oh, really?
I mean,
you're talking about the conversation you had in the food court at the mall after the movie was over, right?
No, I'm talking about like the,
you're saying, did straight dudes in high school talk like that?
Yes.
And there were a lot of tremendously unenlightened conversations among high school students in my small-town Wisconsin upbringing.
Yeah. Imagine that.
These two little boomlets are not just in high school sex comedies, but also in high school comedies. Yeah. And although I don't necessarily lament the loss of your losing it, your last
Porkies.
American virgin, your Porkies, and so forth. Not your Porkies, personally, but...
I don't even know entirely what that means.
The loss of your Porkies.
I do sometimes think it's a shame that you don't kind of have that thread much anymore of clueless.
You're fun, sparkly.
Stuff that Amy Heckerling was doing.
Sure, right.
Fast Times at Ridgemont High, and then also doing Clueless. Those kind of smart, fun, you know, silly, still meant to be appreciated by high school students, or even the very sort of earnest stuff that John Hughes did.
Right.
I think it's kind of a bummer that there just are not that many comedies being made about high school.
The thing you can overlook easily when you go back to look at some of these titles is that there was an innocence to them in a strange way.
Right.
And even if it was meant to embarrass and humiliate it, there was something. Sweet is the wrong word. I don't exactly know where I'm going here, but
there is. I mean, I think in Risky Business, for example, you definitely get the sense that although he's obviously very interested in sex, he's also a little bit of a doofus about it.
Yeah.
And there's definitely a sense of being sadly in need of education.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, there's a clumsiness to so many of the protagonists in those films. But I think
Weird Science comes to mind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Weird Science is another good one.
One thing that I wonder is because we don't have as much of waves of these now, you have this sort of unfortunate phenomenon of those movies still exist. I mean, people still watch 16 Candles. Mm-hmm. People still watch Pretty in Pink. People still watch, you know, all those, you know, those movies. But it's like, I feel like young people today are going to someday be nostalgic for our nostalgia.
Yeah.
And you'd rather that each generation sort of get its own.
It's not that there are none. There are a handful since 2005. We've talked about Easy A a bunch of times.
Oh, yeah, which is quite specifically about, you know, losing your virginity and expectations thereof.
Well, but
which
and high school reputations
and what's
at stake.
But which also has that sort of innocence to it that Glenn was talking about, where on the one hand it's sort of raunchy in places, and on the other hand it's a wholesome
film. Ultimately.
It is sweet. I think another question anytime you're looking at trends in film is that obviously there's been a massive explosion of television, of available television.
Right. So some of that product is going there.
Well, certainly in the post-2000, let's say, era, you had massive growth of stuff like the WB and eventually the CW.
True.
I think where you don't anymore necessarily have Clueless and stuff like that, you do have Gossip Girl and obviously in its time, Buffy and stuff like that.
Hmm.
So there's certainly been some movement.
I want to know what you all think about. We've talked about how this stuff sort of comes and goes, but as you've mentioned, it sort of comes back in waves, in part because of the popularity of particular movies that open the market. But there must be a societal role that this stuff fills, right? Because the teen sex comedy wasn't invented by Hollywood. Shakespeare wrote a teen sex comedy.
Right.
It's called Act One, Scene Four of Romeo and Juliet.
Sure.
One of the oldest comedies in the English, well, not in the English language, but in the Western world, is Lysistrata. And it is, you think
right.
Porky's is dirty?
Right.
The Greeks knew how to be dirty.
Sure.
So what does this do for us? What kind of valve is it, aside from the obvious kind?
You guys start, because I have a theory, but it's going to be different for me than it is for somebody like Steven and for you.
The ones I was always drawn to, I think it won't surprise anyone of these, was more the John Hughes-y kind of, and The Sure Thing, which Glenn mentioned, which I've talked about a bunch of times, which is another one that sort of is blatantly about sex, but on the other hand, there's a lot of shyness in that movie and, mm-hmm. and caution. But I was definitely never into like Porky's and stuff like that. I loved Risky Business, which I saw sometime in high school. Loved that one. I think for me, they were sort of fairy tales. I mean, I think something, mm-hmm. even something like The Breakfast Club is really a fairy tale about escape. You know, you could envision being locked in a dungeon with a bunch of people in the same mess
right.
as you.
Right.
And you get a pretty typical fairy story. And that's not even taking into account the sort of Pretty in Pink and Some mm-hmm. Kind of Wonderful and things like that, fairy stories.
Yeah, I mean, I'm somewhat similar. I sort of lump your Porky's and a lot of movies like that.
I'll lump your Porky's,
baby.
It's not on purpose. It just keeps happening that it makes me laugh.
It just happens. But I sort of lump those movies, the really kind of raunchy sex comedies, with almost like Friday the 13th, Nightmare on Elm Street. You know, a lot of... But I mean,
that is telling.
No.
Yes,
I do not.
Is.
Not
yes,
from
it
a,
is.
To explore
from
this.
A, no. Hear me out. In terms of, they were movies that my friends would get together
right.
and watch.
Yeah, sure.
And,
I gotcha.
And I just wasn't as well versed in them, in part because my parents hated them, and my parents were much more interested in showing me Midnight. So a lot of the stuff that really appealed to me more was the sort of more aspirational, more teen angsty, your mm-hmm. Breakfast Club. A big one for me was Stand By Me.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
You know, which is not a raunchy teen comedy.
My Bodyguard,
My
which
Bodyguard,
I know you
totally.
Like.
And even like The Karate Kid. Mm-hmm. They were more youth-oriented, aspirational, kicksand back in the bully's face, mm-hmm. you know, that kind of stuff. And now, as far as your question of, you know, what makes them eternal, I think it's just puberty is eternal.
Right.
You know, I mean, first of all, my puberty is definitely eternal. But also, you know, I mean, there's always just a new wave. And, you know, everybody has been 12, 13, 14, 15 mm-hmm. years old.
Yeah.
You know, speaking to the id and the aspirations of those people, you're never going to go broke connecting with those people.
And to me, what specifically makes the sex comedy valuable is that it's all about exposing the shared terror of adolescence and the emergence of a pubescent sexuality. It brings it to the surface. It points out that everybody feels this way. It airs all of that tension, right? It helps you grow up.
Stephen mentions the sort of social aspect of seeing these movies.
Right.
It's important to remember that these were movies with pretty broad appeal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I don't think you can really believe that even something like Porky's, which seems like the most sort of targeted to the people for whom it is targeted, was being seen strictly by that audience.
Right.
Because one of the things I looked at on this chart was they can give you adjusted grosses mm-hmm. in like 2012 dollars.
Oh.
In 2012 dollars, Porky's made almost $300 million at the box office. That was
a gigantic, epically huge hit.
And for me, they served a different role. I'm talking about the sex comedies now. They were anthropology to me. I was not this. I didn't feel these feelings particularly. But I was expected to. So this is what these feelings look like. This is what a randy young teen is supposed to be. So I tried to model that behavior.
I don't know
how successful I was.
Wow.
I
think if you go back and interview some of my friends from high school, I was probably sideshow bobbing it. I was probably,
right.
Oh, yeah, shake it, madam. Capital knockers. That's probably
I can imagine. I can imagine what you know, one of Glenn's peers telling us today. It always did feel a little performative.
Yeah.
That's exactly how it's
Capital
it
Capital Knockers is actually the name of my DC-based burlesque troupe.
I was going to say roller derby team. But,
oh, gracious. Yeah, so to close this out, I'm just going to rattle off the top five in 2012 dollars.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Top five in what they called R-rated youth. One we have not talked about, Animal House, $469 million in 2012 dollars. Porky's, $295 million. There's something about Mary, $293 million.
Youth oriented, really?
That's what they have it under. They have The Hangover there, too. That's $291 million.
Yeah.
And then Wedding Crashers. So R-rated youth has kind of gotten taken over by these youth.
Yeah, right. By R-rated 30-year-olds.
Maybe
right.
for
yeah.
youth,
stories
but
about,
not about
yeah,
youth.
30 years
Whereas
old.
High school comedies... in 2012 dollars, according to, again, their classifications, which who knows. Number one, Porky's, $295. Number two, American Pie, $158. Mm-hmm. Number three, Risky Business, $157. Number four, Ferris Bueller's Day Off,
sure.
$148. And number five, Superbad, $138 million. And yet, did not, as I mentioned, lead to another wave of high school comedies. Yeah. So perhaps we're ready to see some more.
Well, we did just get Project X.
Yeah.
Yes, that's one of these. That's one of the about the three or four since about 2005. So if you have fond memories of watching teen sex comedies, I can't, not sure this is a great idea, but do share your memories of watching teen sex comedies with us on Facebook at facebook.com/PCHH or at the blog npr.org/monkeysee. That's where we hang out and chat. Okay, so spring break out of the way, we move on to another time of year question, which is Easter. Hmm. Specifically, we want to talk about the religious holiday.
Yes.
No, naturally not. This being a pop culture discussion, we are here to discuss candy.
Right.
Okay? Sure. Easter candy. I want to hear some arguments, pro and or con, with Easter candy. Does anyone have feelings on Peeps? Mike Hatzifar, estimable producer, gives the thumbs down to Peeps. Anyone else?
I think Peeps, if you toast them carefully over a gas flame.
Toasted Peeps?
Yes.
Well, it's like roasted marshmallows.
Exactly.
But what happens to the sugar food coloring?
Don't they melt?
Isn't it
like the scream?
It would be like creme brulee.
It caramelizes.
They are filler. They distract from the basket. I mean, you wouldn't start with that. You wouldn't even end with that. It's
No, it is traditional that you start with the chocolate bunnies because that's how you get to the tableau of the bunny with his butt bitten off.
Right, that's
who
key.
Says, my butt that's hurts. Key. And the other bunny with his ears bitten off who says, what?
I see what you're doing there.
Wow, bunny dioramas.
I was too busy just gorging myself to even think of some of that. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm sure I bit the bunny's butt. But part of the joy of the Peeps, and I'm a Peeps defender,
are you?
Is that they are eternal. Arguably, if they get stale enough, they're almost more chewy and delicious.
Yeah.
Shelf life of infinity.
Pretty much.
Well, because it's made of packing foam.
We have discussed the Peep show on this podcast before, right?
Yes.
And Peeps are awesome because you can arrange them into dioramas.
Yes.
Again with the dioramas. It all comes back to dioramas for Trey Graham.
I think Peeps are part of the personality of Easter candy, and that they're a little bit more like eggnog, where it becomes a time of year thing.
Well, bunny or chicks? I mean, that's got to be a real chick.
Bunnies.
Really? They're called Peeps, Trey.
I was going to say, I feel like they should be chicks, but I just feel like...
You think everything should be chicks.
That's my rule on this podcast.
I got nothing. I mean, I'm aware of their work. I just don't... Where do we come down on Cadbury cream eggs?
They are of the devil.
They are of the devil.
However, I know what you're going to say, and you're right.
If you deep fry them.
Oh, what? That was not what I was going to say. You are from the South. I thought you were going to talk about the commercials, which are
the commercials
are
kind of adorable, right?
The given.
Bark, bark, Easter bunny.
Right.
The cute little bunny. What's cuter than a bunny?
I got no problem with the shell. It's the white and yellow goo.
Here's the thing.
What are you saying?
Which is too reminiscent of the thing it's aping.
Right. I don't eat raw eggs.
It's
why
too on
do
the
you,
nose.
Why do you want to make me feel like I'm eating a raw egg?
It's sweetened condensed milk, which is why when you wrap the thing in breading and deep fry it, it becomes chocolatey awesome.
That is a great idea.
Seriously.
It's not. It's a terrible idea because when you make something that it's just like eating a raw egg made of candy. Like it's like making a candy that's like, this is just like, I don't know.
Moldy bread.
It's just like moldy bread. Thank you. Moldy bread made of candy.
So what you're saying is that when you get to the Easter aisle at the drugstore this week and you discover the little plastic bunny who poops out brown chocolate-covered raisins,
would not
eat that?
Yeah, no,
that's
that
terrible.
No.
My nephews were so into that last year.
Well, they're nephews. Yeah.
That's okay for nephews. That's the nephew's job.
That's
How do you feel about jelly beans?
Okay, here's a point. Jelly beans are a high-fructose corn syrup delivery system.
Yeah.
You want volume and you want flavor. You don't want to have to think about it. You don't want it to be fussy. So jelly bellies with their, maybe we're chocolate.
Ooh,
maybe we're popcorn.
Yeah.
No. Absolutely not.
I've never understood the need for weird flavored jelly beans. Classic jelly beans are good.
Yeah, the popcorn jelly beans are not my favorite.
No,
the buttered popcorn flavor. That's kind
of
weird.
They're the favorite of freaks.
How about, pro or con? Black licorice jelly beans.
Absolutely not. Get it out of there.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Cannot stand black licorice.
No.
I like black licorice fine, but black jelly beans I will actually toss.
Ugh, wow.
Oh, yeah. So Trey, you're a black licorice guy?
They must be separated out, of course, because you wouldn't want to eat them with the green
blue
ones.
They blast your palate for the other jelly beans.
Yes, they're strong.
It's part of the problem. Chocolate peanut butter, your Reese's eggs.
Your Reese's egg? No, that's an abomination.
It's the same item.
No.
It's just with more
peanut
butter.
It's not meant to be in that shape, and that's the problem, the ratio.
Oh, no, it's not. You are absolutely wrong. That is the thing.
A pox on you, sir.
I abjure you.
Issue number one.
I cast you out.
Marshmallow peeps! And then a clift!
Everything that isn't a peanut butter chocolate egg is a distraction.
That's fair.
Even the bunny.
For me today, it was not true when I was a kid, but today that's immediately. Absolutely. When I'm eating my kids' Easter candy, that's the first place.
That's right. And there's usually not enough of them. There's only maybe one or two.
And see, here's my thing about Easter candy, is that Easter candy always includes some chocolate. Mm-hmm. I enjoy chocolate.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But it always is insipid chocolate. That's the problem.
Right, it's always terrible
like
chocolate.
The chocolate bunny is often
kind of soapy.
A
it's
hollow.
Old.
Hollow bad.
Right. Yeah, hollow is unacceptable.
That's brittle. Brittle and hollow.
Brittle and hollow is like an
you
insult.
You know that we've had a bad year when we get the, hollow bunny. Oh, dear. It's a hard candy Christmas.
Hollow bunny Easter.
It's a hollow bunny Easter.
It's a hollow bunny Easter. But also, you can only pass that quality of chocolate off on little kids.
Right.
You know, if someone gives me like a chocolate bunny from Easter, I will probably not eat it because why would I do that when I could eat dark chocolate M&Ms?
That's fair.
No, I've been known to wolf entire Easter bunnies.
I bring you the question of the Russell Stover coconut cream and marshmallow egg.
I don't believe I've had that.
No,
I've not had it either, and I would not based on that description.
No,
there's nothing
not.
In there that I would want.
No. So, quickly, my mom is already going to have to take to our Facebook page to defend her parenting for a different part of this discussion.
Yeah.
But far worse than any other thing my parents have done for me was the fate, and I know that my mom, as soon as we started talking about this, was thinking, oh God, he's going to bring up the year that mom and dad, for whatever reason, decided that we were going to have a healthy Easter.
Oh, no.
Fun.
Toothbrushes? What was it? What?
It might as well have been toothbrushes and pennies. It was the equivalent of giving out toothbrushes and pennies for Halloween.
Orange.
So you got
actual eggs.
I kid you not.
Granola.
No. Dried fruit.
Oh.
That's awesome. The only way that could be better is if it were like artichokes that had been like gaily decorated and stuffed in your Easter
it
basket.
It might as well have been actual rabbit poop. As far as how my sister Valerie and I reacted, literal howls of protest.
It was an insult.
Literal howls of protest. This actually turned out quite well because to make up for the brutal injustice of this dried fruit, my parents had to take us out to the store the next day, at which point we bought twice as much
because
it was deep,
Easter.
It was deep discounted Easter candy. And so we ultimately, it has a happy ending.
Sure.
But parents, don't do that.
Also avoid Tootsie Rolls or Tootsie Pops, any vector for Tootsie,
really?
which is
pro-Tootsie.
A brown, joyless candle wax that purports to be chocolate. It is not,
is not
no,
chocolate.
No, it tastes nothing like
it
chocolate.
Is to be injured,
nothing resembling
it is to be
chocolate.
Cast out. It is abomination.
I have eaten the combined weight of all the people in this room worth of Tootsie.
Why?
I like Tootsie.
And she, you.
Yeah. One of my favorite Glenn Weldon tweets in history was the one that said, blow greater than Tootsie if we're talking about pops. On the other hand, if we're talking about films, it's the other way around. That was a favorite of mine.
You know, what is good, a good idea, instead of Tootsie, is to throw into this basket, which is supposed to be about the earth and rebirth, you know, some gummy worms. Huh?
I'm very pro-gummy.
Make it whimsical. And remind your children that we all die.
you will one day be worms.
Here's a thing that I do not advise, which is a thing that I discovered as I was researching this question, this part of the conversation. Do not attempt to devil your eggs in such a way that they look like little fluffy yellow chicks emerging from cracking shells.
Well, that would be bad.
It was disturbing.
Yeah.
It was truly, truly disturbing.
Where did you get this idea?
Believe it or not, I was looking around for horrifying Easter edibles. That was the Google phrase that I put in.
Horrifying Easter edibles?
Yes, or, you know, scary Easter candy. I tried several variations on the phrases.
Yeah. And there is out there a recipe for deviled Cadbury cream eggs.
Yes.
You can actually kind of just whip them up with some yellow food coloring.
Well, but here's another question before we leave this topic. Did your Easter baskets include actual eggs.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Always.
Which was ultimately
actual hard-boiled eggs.
Ultimately, hard-boiled eggs were probably the most coveted.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, I love a hard-boiled egg.
Oh, yeah. God, yeah.
Gross. Gross.
Glenn's not a hard-boiled egg guy.
Not a hard-boiled egg guy. Just they smell and they're...
Did you smell?
No.
It's hard to avoid.
You have this sweet scent of candy and cellophane, and then you ruin it with sulfur.
Eggs. Yeah. It's a fair point. It's a fair
Money
point.
Money farts.
Funny. All right. Well, if you want to talk to us about Easter candy, again, find us on Facebook, find us at the blog. You can do it. Come and let us know. Are we wrong about Peeps? Are we wrong about Cadbury cream eggs?
So if you each had to pick one thing, I would say peanut butter egg.
All of the above.
Uh-huh.
Cadbury cream eggs.
I need a dark chocolate bunny.
All right, then. Okay.
Yeah, I would take a chocolate bunny, but only a good quality.
And I think ultimately, Glenn, I would agree. If I had to pick one, your peanut butter egg.
Right. Your peanut butter egg. Trey, did you say?
Cadbury cream eggs, but again, deep fried.
Oh, so wrong. All right. Well, this is the final segment of our show. It is time for What is Making Us Happy This Week. Let's go the other way. Glenn Weldon, what is making you happy this week?
In 1966, a musical called It's a Bird, It's a Plane, It's Superman premiered on Broadway.
What would cause you to be researching this
yes,
right
Yes, exactly. It was made by the people who made Bye Bye Birdie and Applause, got some good reviews, and the soundtrack...
Yeah.
Trey Graham would have my head.
Uh-huh.
The cast album is available on iTunes, and I think people who listen to it would agree that it's pretty unremarkable, except for one song called You've Got Possibilities, which was sung by a young 29-year-old ingenue called Linda Lavin. That's all.
Nice.
Let's take a beat and marinate in that for a while. It did become a modest hit. I mean, the show closed after 3 months. It wasn't a, you know, breakout thing. But that song turns up in cabaret acts every so often, and certainly it's used as an audition song quite often. So I was looking around to figure out why this song and why others, not other songs, and I came across on the YouTube a guy by the name of Seth Radetzky. Have you heard of Seth Radetzky?
Oh, absolutely.
I feel like I have.
Okay. He's a guy who's huge in the Broadway scene. What he does in this series of videos is he kind of deconstructs various Broadway songs. So here's an excerpt from You've Got Possibilities, sung by a incredibly young Linda Lavin.
Haircut, simply terrible, necktie, the worst bearing, just unbearable, what to tackle first, still you've got possibilities, though you're horribly square. I see possibilities underneath. There's something there.
And what Seth Radetzky does in these videos is he breaks it down, tells you what the trumpets are doing in this verse, what the trombones are doing, what the violins are doing, how Linda Lavin's phrasing delivers the joke. And so let's hear a little bit of that right now.
So Linda Lavin played this role, and she sings this song to Clark Kent, who you know is Superman. And she's saying, like, you know, I can tell there's something good looking underneath all that. Of course, he's at least Superman. So here are all the things we have to deconstruct. I love the quiet, quiet clarinets at the beginning. Just bum ka kung ka kung bum ka kung kung kung. It's so simple, the orchestration. Dun, 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 dun. Just bass, bass. Clarinets. It's clarinets, then the bass, bass. Amazing. Then I love her sort of half voice. Haircut. Simply terrible. It's just like weird half voice that she uses because she's sort of like analyzing him. Haircut. Simply terrible. Obsessed with that. Then she does a weird pronunciation. She goes, bearing, just unbearable. What to, she literally adds an H. Well, I mean, you're supposed to add it, but no one really does in real life. What to tackle first. So you've got, let's just listen to that. So it's the clarinet, bass, what, and also the half voice. Here we go. Clarinets.
In this particular video, does he overpraise this song? I think you could argue that he does. Do you get about halfway into it and realize this is really an excuse for him to lip sync for his life? Sure you do. But it's coming from a genuine, very funny place. It's really informative. So we'll put a link to this on the Facebook page and on the show page. Enthusiasm in pursuit of nerdery is no vice. So this guy, even though he's maybe taking a little bit farther than
right.
I would in his enthusiasm for the song. It's great.
Outstanding, outstanding. Trey Graham, what is making you happy this week?
Not coincidentally, it involves musical theater and theater. I am just back from a weekend in New York, and after 20-odd years of writing about the theater, finally got around to seeing Angela Lansbury on the stage in a play called The Best Man, which is by Gore Vidal, and it's a political drama. And she was great fun. She is taking a victory lap, is how I might put this. It's a small part. She comes on for two scenes, sits there, and cracks a couple of jokes and acts eccentric, and she's great fun. The revelation, the thing that's actually making me happy, is that John Larroquette, really good stage actor.
Oh, yeah.
That doesn't surprise
terrific,
me. That doesn't
surprise me. Terrific stage actor. Just tremendous command of the space and authority. Holding his own against not just Lansbury, who's on stage for a while, but James Earl Jones, who's mm-hmm. on stage for rather more than that. I really enjoyed his performance. I'd seen this play before, and I enjoyed it rather more this time because he's just terrific. I also may have sung at Don't Tell Mama.
Excellent. What did you sing?
I may have sung a melancholy show tune. It will come as no surprise to you. September Song from Knickerbocker Holiday.
I was going to say, was it 16 going on 17?
Yeah, yes. So that was my theater weekend. A little Lansbury and a little cabaret.
Wonderful, my dear. We are happy to have you back. Stephen Thompson, what is making you happy this week?
Well, I have been blazing through a third book. Of course, it's just Mockingjay. It's the third.
Holy crime!
I'm like,
you're
already,
on a roll.
I'm already like, you know, eventually it's gonna be, it's gonna form.
They're gonna knock down a forest of trees to feed your growing habit.
To feed my literacy tonight, while our esteemed producer Mike Katziff roots for the Kansas Jayhawks, who are his equivalent of the Green Bay Packers. Since Mike does not actually have a microphone in front of him, I should say on his behalf, Rock Chalk Jayhawk. If I hope I'm saying that right. While Mike is watching that game, and I am greeting it with icy indifference, I will be seeing the band Wild Flag in concert, a wonderful, wonderful band featuring Carrie Brownstein, who is on Portlandia and is a former NPR blogger. I saw them about a year ago and can't wait to see them again. Finally, because my kids are on spring break, I intend to turn my attention to finally watching Friday Night Lights, which I've only seen like 5 episodes of, but I intend to blaze through in the next week or so.
You're going right? to love it. You're going to love it. All right.
I've already loved what I've seen.
Excellent choice. Very good choice. Okay. What is making me happy this week that I decided to talk about is what I blogged about today, which is the trailer for the new Aaron Sorkin drama on HBO. Now, what is making me happy about it is that I am always filled with an odd thrill of hope when the guy comes back with something new, mm-hmm. despite the fact that I really only thought about half of what he did on The West Wing was as good as it got credit for being. And I'm talking about the period before he left. Mm-hmm. Even the period when he was still there, I felt only about half of it holds up as well as it often gets credit for. Sorry, don't email me. And I did not like Studio 60 on the Sunset Strip at all. I have liked lots and lots of other things that he's done, Sports Night, but also a bunch of the movies that he's done. The Social Network script is good. Moneyball was good and not too Sorkin-y. So they released the trailer for this drama, which is about the backstage doings at a cable news show, and it stars Jeff Daniels. And
it is called?
It is called The Newsroom.
The Newsroom, right, yeah.
And Jeff Daniels and Emily Mortimer and Sam Waterston and a bunch of other people. And, you know, it's one of those things where you realize your cynicism has not overtaken you, because even with somebody whose work you consider incredibly uneven, if you have found some of it to be super awesome, that little piece of you still just comes back and says, I'm totally going to see if I can find that little thing I really, really like. The guy comes back and back, and I'm about 50-50. Honestly.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not like one of the things where the good half is the beginning of his career and the bad half
is the
other
half.
So the odds are still with you.
He's problematic in several ways, mm-hmm. But he is undeniably talented.
I love listening to the dialogue. The sort of Sorkin-y dialogue is the kind of thing you get used to it, and then some people are so bugged by it that they find it distracting. I personally get used to it. I can still recite lots and lots of it, mm-hmm. from different things. And it just kind of works on me. Rhythmically, it kind of works on me. And I'm happy to be reminded that there will be another opportunity to either love his stuff, which is great, or make fun of his stuff, which is always awesome.
Which is also
fun. Always
yeah.
incredibly make-funnable in some really great way if it's bad.
You know, I think one of the things that we both like about him is that his dialogue is paced usually in such a way that you have to kind of work to keep up with it in the same way that you did in the great romantic comedies of the 30s.
Right. I think that's right. And that pleases me. And yeah. like I said, it always brings out a lot of good humor if it's bad. So mm-hmm. It's sort of win-win. Uh-huh. So that's what's making me happy this week is considering the possibility of either liking or hating a new Aaron Sorkin show. And that's what's making me happy. So that brings us to the end of our show. You can follow all of us on Twitter. You can follow me and the blog at NPR Monkey C. You can follow Stephen at I Dislike Stephen, S-T-E-P-H-E-N. You can follow Trey Graham, who is texting right now.
I am.
Trey Graham, Trey with an E, Graham like the cracker. You can follow Glenn at G-H Weldon, W-E-L-D-O-N. You can follow our estimable producer, Mike Katziff, at Mike Katziff, K-A-T-Z-I-F. You'll know whether the Jayhawks won or lost by what you see from Mike on the Twitter. And Mike's band,
if he's even still alive by the time this episode
That's
airs.
Right. Mike's band, Hello Come In, provides our in and out music. You're listening to it right now. Thanks to all of you guys for being here as always.
Thank you.
You.
And thanks to all of you for listening, and we will see you back here next week.